I'm talking with Ken Golden, professor of mathematics and adjunct professor of bioengineering at the University of Utah, and he's telling us about his research in sea ice. So now, is there any one property of sea ice, or a couple of properties maybe, or any big challenge that you'd like to overcome at this point?
Yeah, I would say that certainly what's been going on in the Arctic opens up a whole new major set of questions for the world. Historically, the Arctic ice pack has been a perennial pack in the sense that most of it stays in the summertime, and there's significant presence of multi-year ice that survives the summer melt season. However, since about 1980, in the last 25, 30 years or so, that perennial ice pack has lost significant portions of it. In particular, look at the charts in comparison of how much ice we've lost. In comparison with, say, the land area of the United States, the amount of permanent ice pack or perennial ice pack lost since about 1980 corresponds to, or at least what was lost up until 2 years ago, corresponds to that portion of the United States east of the Mississippi River. And then, amazingly, within the last 2 years, since 2005, we've lost yet again another huge swath of the Midwest, basically. And so there's now been just a tremendous loss of the perennial ice pack in the Arctic, and as I mentioned before, that means much more absorption of solar radiation, particularly in the summertime when it's not being ice covered, as opposed to the way it was, 20 years ago or whatever. And so the really fundamental question is how big a transformation, has the ice really gone through? Have we reached a tipping point? Is it recoverable? Where is this all going to play out in 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 years? Is the Arctic ice pack going to turn over to a state where it's completely seasonal and there's no more multi-year ice in the summertime? This is good. This has a lot of implications for global climate. Geopolitical implications in terms of resource usage in the Arctic regions, competition for various competing countries to get at these resources, the people that live up there, their lives have already been affected significantly by climate change issues. And so anyway, so that's one of the central issues, I think, is how all this plays out, these tremendous changes that we're seeing, particularly in the Arctic. One of the big issues for addressing this is these global climate models and sort of incorporating sea ice in a more realistic way into these big global climate models that are designed to sort of predict climate changes over 10, 15, 20, 50, 100 years. And in particular, one of the issues that comes up a lot in numerical analysis and in complicated nonlinear systems is chaos theory and sensitive dependence on initial parameters and situations like that. And one has to face this in the context of sea ice. Namely, when you want to run these models for 10, 15, 20, 50 years, you need to have a pretty accurate picture of what you're modeling and what's actually of the various components of the system that are important to the overall behavior. And sea ice plays a central role. And sea ice is represented in these climate models in sometimes very non-sophisticated and very cartoonish ways. And one of the implications of our work is that some of the processes that are really important in global climate, such as this melt pond evolution, or these kinds of processes have not been incorporated in realistic ways into global climate models. And as I was alluding to, small errors run over 10, 15, 50, 100 years, they can build up. And so in order to really get an accurate assessment of what's going on over a long period of time, you need a pretty accurate representation of the system itself. And so I think one of the big challenges is to more accurately represent the sea ice pack into these global climate models to get better and more accurate predictions of what's actually going to happen and how this matter is going to play out over a long period of time. In connection with this, one of the most important sort of things that we don't know necessarily, particularly in the Antarctic, is the thickness of the ice pack. The frequencies that satellite sensors generally work at, which is the microwave range, these microwaves don't penetrate easily into sea ice for the same reason that it's hard to communicate with submarines in underwater, because electromagnetic waves get attenuated or get absorbed by seawater or salty sea ice. So one of the big issues, particularly in the Antarctic, where we don't have submarines like we have had in the Arctic going underneath the ice packs, we don't have a lot of great data on the thickness of the ice pack. And this is, monitoring the volume of the ice. We can get a good idea of the extent of the ice packs, the polar ice packs, because satellites can see the aerial extent of the ice. However, it's difficult to get your hands on the thickness of the ice. And so that's one of the big challenges also is to get a handle on the thickness of the ice and the volume of the ice as we go forward. As a major component of this issue of trying to figure out what's going on in the Arctic and in the Antarctic.
Now you've been to both places, and now you mentioned that there have been drastic changes recently. Have you yourself seen these changes?
Yeah, that's a good question, Mike. Let me separate the two cases. In particular, in the Antarctic, I've seen, you know, short snapshots, and frankly, I've not really seen a lot of changes per se. In fact, there's not really, I don't think there's been too much, certainly from satellite observations, you know, in terms of the extent of the Antarctic sea ice pack and these kinds of issues. I don't think that we've seen the kind of changes that are completely obvious in the Arctic, say. So, you know, just seeing little snapshots here and there, it's a little difficult to say that. Now, however, in the Arctic, which I have visited almost yearly since about 2000, I mean, there've been a couple of years I haven't gone, but I have been up to the Arctic, you know, quite a bit. I have seen changes. Just more anecdotal than, you know, than sort of systematic observations that really show the effects of climate change. However, one of the things that I've noticed is we used to see off Barrow, which is where we go, which is right on the Chukchi Sea, in the Arctic Ocean, we used to see these really massive ridges, sort of just off, you know, just offshore, massive ridges meaning stacked up ice, like really, really high up, you know, and you knew that it was going down underneath, you know, in the water very deeply as well. And these were big multi-year flows that just get all stacked up and called pressure ridges. And basically, you don't see that too much. And in the last couple of years, I haven't really noticed that nearly as much. And that does correlate with the known information about that there's just much less year multi-year ice in the Arctic, as I've mentioned before, and also there's a lot less multi-year ice close up to the shore in Barrow. Basically, you can see that on the satellite images. Another, just one little story in particular was, let's see, a number of years ago, we would go out to a place called Elson Lagoon. Like, this was out in June, go out to Elson Lagoon, which is sort of a protected little area just off the Arctic Ocean, right in the Barrow area. And several years ago, we'd go out there in the late spring and, you know, go out and do a lot of experiments and stuff. And a couple of years ago, we drove out there and basically expecting to find a lot of ice. And there just was no ice there. It was just all open water. All the ice had disappeared. And, you know, again, who knows? Okay, is that global warming? You know, who knows? But it was just an anecdotal piece of evidence that, well, it, you know, we had gone out there years before to get ice, but in this particular year, it just wasn't there. And I should also mention that having gone up to Barrow, Alaska, a lot, you know, and just interacting some with the local people in the communities up there, you know, certainly their lives, as I mentioned before, their lives have been changed. And for example, as I said, the ice doesn't come in as far; they have to go out further to hunt whales. There's a lot of effects that they've adjustments that they've made in their lives, I think, to compensate for climate change.
Thanks, Ken. It's Ken Golden of the University of Utah. In the next two parts, Ken will talk about some of his adventures in the Arctic and Antarctic and how undergraduates are involved in sea ice research.